You're listening to the Bold True Life podcast with Hana and Maymuna. We're sisters, life coaches, and we have honest conversations about what it takes to blaze your own trail in life.
This means we'll be talking about the triumphs and the struggles of showing up to our lives with authenticity, courage, and mindfulness. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, just wanted to pop in really quick to let you know that this episode is the first half of our two-part series premiere. Both this episode and the next one are currently available on our website at boldtruelife.com/podcast, as well as most major podcast players. Welcome to the Bold True Life podcast. It's our first episode.
Woohoo!
This is Hana.
And this is Maymuna. We are sisters working on a bold true life, and today we are going to be interviewing each other so that you guys can get a chance to know us.
Yep, and we don't know what questions we prepared for each other, so it's going to be each of our first times hearing the questions that we're being asked. So it's not it's not scripted or planned really at all. It's just going to happen how it happens.
Yep. So I'm going to go first. This is Maymuna again. I'm 8 years older than my sister, and I'll just be asking you a few questions. So actually, this is kind of what I wanted to be asking about. You're 8 years younger, mm-hmm. and it's just us. We have no other siblings, no other brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. and we didn't have the most conventional upbringing. It wasn't weird or anything. It wasn't out there, but at the same time, it wasn't super conventional. We're Muslims living in America, and we went to you started off at public school, and then later on, I wouldn't call it an Islamic school because I wouldn't claim that, but their school's run by Muslims. They taught all this basic curriculum and then added Arabic and classes about Islam. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question for you is, looking back, I know, like, talking to some classmates, they really resented kind of being insulated, mm-hmm. and some people really appreciated that, so there's, like, different opinions. What do you feel are the pros and cons of that whole upbringing, and then B, how did it shape who you are today?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the school that you're talking about is primarily the high school experience, right?
Right, and your middle school, just like your whole...
All of it? Okay. I think even within those experiences, mine was a little bit unique in that I went to public school when I was younger, and then I went to several different private schools, but most kids in all of those private schools had been there for, like, since kindergarten. They hadn't had that same experience of having to switch schools often or getting to know people throughout their life. Like, they just had the same set of friends from kindergarten all the way until, you know, they got to eighth grade or they graduated high school. And so I think that made my experience a little bit easier for adulthood. Just having to learning to transition to new environments and getting to know people. And it wasn't, you know, it's in at that time in those particular age ranges, it's hard to break into, you know, new groups, especially when everyone has, like, these long established relationships already. Right. So I would say when it came to school in particular, I didn't have, like, a really, you know, close set of friends from school. I mean, I made friends, but it was more, we weren't super close. It was just a little more surfacey in some ways because we, compared to these other really long-term established relationships so many of them had, it was different. You know, they had only known me for a little while compared to so many of the other people that they were around. Right. But like you mentioned, just the unconventionalness of our growing up, the nice thing that I think really helped throughout that process was the youth group. Our parents were part of this larger Ethiopian Muslim community, and, you know, we live in the DC area, so they were really involved in the Ethiopian Muslim community around here. And one of the things that a lot of the parents helped put together was a youth group when you, well, really it was, you know, you guys, Mooney. So like my sister right. mentioned, she's 8 years older. So kind of her, that set of siblings.
That generation. Yeah.
I guess, I don't know. We're the same generation, but it's almost different. So, so they kind of established it. And then so many of them had these younger sisters like me. And so we just kind of went and followed in their footsteps and were involved in it growing up. But we got to start even because our sisters were already in it. We started really young compared to even them. So that really helped me to establish close relationships that I kind of kept through, you know, from like, I feel like I had the same friends from like when I was 8 or something up until right. I graduated from high school. And then throughout, right. you know, I'm still friends with so many of those people now. So
we were kind of insulated in the sense that we had a lot of other people like us that we were around. And I shouldn't say like us because the Muslim community in America is so diverse. Yeah. I think it's the most diverse group in America. But so there's like we see the nuanced difference. How did that affect how you relate just your American side and your this otherness side? Did you see any pros and cons with having a base? And then tell me about that.
Yeah. If there's a pro, I think definitely having that base helped for me to just get more comfortable with all that otherness, like the being Muslim, the
right.
The Ethiopian, and just really not looking like this typical whatever people imagine when they think the word American. I don't right. look it, you know.
Right.
And so it was really helpful for me having that base. And I would say, you know, really the youth group was that thing for me because, like you said, right. there's so many nuances within the Muslim community too. And all of these different private school experiences that I had, I was never the normal one, I guess, or like the
you're always the one on the like, outside a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I didn't have, you know, I wasn't the one that fit in perfectly right. in any of those experiences. And so the youth group was really helpful for just being in a space where there were a lot of people that looked like me, that grew up like me, that, so it was very, that was really helpful for me to have that connection with people that, you know, made me feel not so other.
Right.
And I think it really helped as I got older and grew up and was in these new experiences. One, I was really just comfortable with who I was because I was around people that made me that way growing up. But then I also, like I mentioned earlier, just having to switch schools so much, it really helped me. I didn't necessarily like it at the time, but it really helped me to establish new relationships or get comfortable in new spaces. I never liked change that much. I still don't love change that much, but I'm really okay with meeting new people in a way that I didn't realize like so many other people had a hard time with. Like,
right.
Generally, I'm an introvert. I have a hard time being around like new groups of people, entire groups, but one-on-one, I actually really enjoy getting to know people. So,
That kind of brings me to question number 2, which is, okay, so that was kind of your high school experience. So there's this time and right after like college, you got your degree. And then after you graduated, you were in this space where you were really uncertain, like unsure what direction you even wanted to go to. And that was unsettling to Abaya. Abaya is our mom. That's what we call her. And she was concerned. Like, I remember her coming to me and being like, oh, you got to talk to your sister. How's your sister doing?
I didn't know this.
Like, you got this degree and you weren't applying for jobs immediately. You're like, oh, you know, I think I'm going to take 6 months and go to Ethiopia, see our family. And then you weren't also kind of sure. You were thinking about coaching, which is what you do now, a life coach. You were in this uncertain space. And so for so many people who are in this, and I hear this so much as a life coach, like I get people coming in after college going, what am I doing with my life? How did you navigate that when other people are also uncomfortable with your uncertainty? How did you figure out what you wanted to do? And what did you learn about yourself?
So I think what my senior year of college, this idea of going to Ethiopia just kept coming. And then it would kind of go away, and then it would come back. And so this idea just kept coming back, and it sort of slowly started forming in my mind, but I didn't know how to do it, how to make it happen, what to do. And so that part of it overwhelmed me in a way, or it made me almost not want to look at it or do it, because it just would take, like, I had to think and apply and be creative and, like, figure out how to do it. And I just didn't know what even the first step was. And so that, I think really when it came down to it at that time, I did know. I knew I wanted to go to Ethiopia. Like, I was kind of set on it in my head. But when I said it out loud to people, then they wanted to know all the details of how I was going to do that. And I didn't know the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's where the uncertainty came in. And I think it showed up, or it looked like it was something else to people, maybe. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do or what direction I wanted to go in. And it was true. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do or how to do it or what direction specifically I wanted to go in. But I knew that just this one thing, I wanted to go to Ethiopia. Like, I just felt this sense of that's where I belong for a little while. And at first, it was just 3 months that I was planning on going for.
Right.
And that's what I got the tickets for. And, you know, my parents were so helpful. Our parents, I should say, were so helpful in that process. I didn't even realize that, you know, our mom was so worried about me. Because they were really, like, I feel like they were so supportive of that idea. And they were.
I think they were supportive of the idea of going to Ethiopia, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think what unsettled her was career-wise, because that's what you do. You go to college, then you apply for a job. And then, like, I don't think she minded the visiting home at all. I think she knew that was going to enrich you. But I think your tentativeness, just even around that piece, she was like, talk to your sister. Like, people in general want that from you. They want you to have a plan. They want you to know what you're doing. It just makes them feel comfortable, right?
So
that piece, in hindsight, that trip was really big for you.
Yeah, it was. And I think also the not knowing aspect of it was important for me. Like, to not know what was going to happen or how to do it, and getting the help that I got from by our parents, extended family, and going and spending all that time, you know, not only did I have help making connections through extended family, but, like, just going and spending time with them and really being taken care of there by them, you know, I never would have survived without all of that. So, yeah, it was so enriching in so many different ways. Like, it was great. I had the chance to volunteer with a couple of different organizations, but what was really more important for me in the end was spending that time with family. And so I went with this, you know, because I had to have a career reason to go, right? So I went with this, like, you know, interning and volunteering. And that was, like, I wanted to do it. That was my reason. But what I ended up walking away with was the family piece was so much bigger for me. And, you know, I grew up with so many of my aunts and uncles and cousins and things coming back and forth here to America, but I never had with so many of those cousins, like, long-term experiences beyond a couple of months, maybe, or not even a few, generally a few weeks. So having 6 whole months around everybody, and it opened my eyes in so many ways. I learned so much about myself and where I came from and my family and all of these little things that, you know, my mom would say suddenly made so much more sense to me. I understood even her in a
like
new
her
way.
Context
I understood her in a whole new way. And you know, I had been to Ethiopia before, but, you know, going for a month at versus going for 6 is just, it's totally different. And so it was so enriching. And it was also, you know, I mentioned change earlier. That's hard for me in general. So this transition, it was rough at times. Like, it wasn't easy to be away from everything that I was used to. But having that family, aspect.
In our particular family, they make that really easy.
Yeah,
to feel like you belong, to feel like you're welcome.
Extremely. Yeah. And it was just such an incredible experience. Yeah, I wouldn't take it back for the world. But in the end, it wasn't the career stuff that made the biggest difference for me. It was really, it was everything else.
Right. So you have this motto that I want to talk about before we talk about like how you got into coaching. Mm-hmm. You have this motto that you say, you know, don't do it all. Do what matters most to you. What struggle did that come out of in your personal life?
I was like, what motto do I have? I don't know if there's a particular struggle, but I will say that time period right after graduating up until now, I guess throughout life, really, but especially I think in your 20s, you probably feel it the most, but I don't know, because I'm still in my 20s, so I can't say what it's going to be like later on. But just this idea of, okay, I'm done with school or I'm about to finish school, so I need to start establishing my career. I need to figure out my relationship, romantic relationships, my friendships, my how I'm going to be involved in my community, what I'm going to do with my life. Yeah, this pressure of figuring it all out and having to do it very quickly. And then as soon as you figure out one aspect of your life, it's like, well, when's the next? You know, it's like even now, you know, I got married like a year and a half ago, and I'm having this career transition at the moment, but going from working full-time to doing more coaching and working part-time, and running this blog and doing this podcast with you, all of the different projects that we're working on right now. Mm-hmm. But everyone keeps wanting to know when we're going to have a baby. Like, that's all anybody cares about. And I'm like, I'm still trying to get my life together, people. Give me a little bit more time. And, you know, it's not that I don't want to have kids. I would love to. So would my husband. It's just like there's this, I feel like there's this expectation.
There's always pressure. Yeah. What's the next thing?
Yeah. As soon as you do one thing that you're supposed to do, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, like as soon as you do one piece that you're supposed to, people just expect the next thing that you're supposed to do to just happen, or for you to just automatically be ready. And it doesn't always look like that, you know. There's
so how
so
did
many...
you let go of those expectations? What did you have to do in your mind, or like where in your life were you like, okay, this is enough, I'm gonna kind of just slow down and do what matters most?
That was a long and slow progression, and I don't think I'm like totally like over it. Yeah, okay. Not like I never worry about, you know, what's expected of me by whoever. But one, there's a part of me that's always had this, like, I just tend to quietly do what I want. Like,
I'm laughing because that is so true.
I'm not like over here, you know, shouting it from the rooftops. Like, I'm going against the grain, but I'm doing, you know, some of the stuff I'm supposed to do, but I'm also like really just doing what I want at the same time. So I felt the pressure. But at the same time, like, I don't know if it's a natural or if I've just adapted and slowly learned to give myself the space. What ended up happening, I guess, along, like, from growing up through now is I've just always been sensitive. I guess that's the word that would describe what I am. Being that way, other people's opinions, thoughts, stuff like that really did and does affect me to a degree. Like, I really care about not necessarily what people think of me. I don't know. There's like such a slight nuance between this, but like how I'm being perceived versus what people think of me. So I don't really mind as much if somebody thinks I'm not doing the right thing with my life, like career-wise, but I do care if they think like I'm not a good person, if that makes sense.
So if it's like a character of yours.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
I think just being so sensitive and caring about how I'm perceived, or noticing, not even necessarily caring, I guess I just really notice what right. people are thinking more than anything else. And just noticing it and knowing that affected me over the years. Like it,
you know what? That is so true, because that time that I would consider myself the most sensitive was in pregnancy. And the fourth pregnancy, I was like, oh my God, it's not that I'm more sensitive. It's that I notice more. That's what it is. My spidey senses are really high. Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's just I'm like a pregnant person all the time, or Lord help me when I actually am pregnant one day. But yeah, I would notice how people were reacting and responding to me. And then I was also really cognizant of myself, like my own, how I was responding in situations too, like my own feelings, my own reactions to things. But when I was younger, I didn't know what to do with that or how to deal with it. I didn't have any of those tools. Like, I didn't have the emotional intelligence, the self-awareness, none of, I didn't have all of that to help me to deal with all of the feelings and all of the things that I was noticing. And so it was just really overwhelming more than anything else.
And so how did that connect to like this idea of just do what matters most?
So slowly, what I had to do was I had to, disconnect isn't the right word, but I had to really focus on specific things over time. Because if I didn't focus on particular stuff along the way, it was just overwhelming. Like I couldn't handle all of it all at the same time. And so out of self-preservation, learning.
So that's what that was.
Yeah. Learning to just focus on one thing at a time. And the reason I did things quietly, just did what I wanted without announcing it to everybody, was so that I didn't have to explain myself. I'm doing what I need to do to take care of myself, to keep myself like healthy and sane and happy and, you know, not go crazy. But at the same time, you know, trying to alleviate anybody else's concerns about, you know, not throwing my life away to or whatever worries or thing, you know, the things people are worried about, concerned about for me. So like just trying to manage both, but really making sure that I was feeling okay. Like I couldn't, because I was so aware of not just other people's stuff, but my own feelings along the way, like I couldn't ignore it.
Right.
And it was much harder to ignore my stuff than other people's stuff.
Next question. You kind of explain, okay, the sensitivity thing. And I know that that's one of the things that brought you towards coaching as a career. But, you know, most people, they kind of go to self-help. They might go to a therapist, whatever, mental health stuff. They'll go pull on the resources they have. They'll read a book. They'll take a class, whatever. Why coaching? Like, why did you choose it as a career?
So I ended up on this path, a couple of reasons. First, I was lucky enough to meet a coach very early, like in my, actually because of you, Moni, in my when I was still in college, in my early 20s, I met Imani Chowdhury, who was like a really good friend of yours, and she has a great YouTube channel. She's one of our future guests on this podcast too. But I met her when I was in that phase of trying to decide what to do and figure out next steps. And I hadn't decided coaching at that time, or even, you know, not for another probably 2 years or 3 years until after we met. But but having met her and seeing the work that she does and hearing from her how that experience has been or was up until that point for her really helped me to get a little bit clearer. And then I was also at the same time talking to another friend of yours, Moni. So having these mentors in the self-help world was one thing. Having both ends of it too, the one who went down the typical route and did all of the college and then the master's and then even the PhD, and then the person who, you know, did her degree and then decided to go get certified as a coach and went down that path, which could also be a long and grueling process, but in a different way. And even though one of them was a psychologist, she's still very different from the typical psychologist or counselors that you'd find. And so just their way of thinking had so much in common. And what I noticed, like I really appreciated, you know, the path that they went down. But what I noticed was it's so much harder to be different when you're going down the traditional path than right. when you take on the coaching path. Because as a coach, you know, you learn a lot about how to coach, and it isn't a craft, you know, and you do need to do it well, but it leaves a lot of room for you doing things your way. Like there's right. not quite as much paperwork involved. The relationship with clients is so different too. You know, as right. a coach, it's really more of a partnership. As a counselor, I think, you know, you are the authority and as the counselor, and the person coming to you, is the patient. And so as I thought about, you know, what I wanted, and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to help people, like I really preferred that partnership relationship and reminding people, like, you know, in the end of the day, I'm here, I'm helping, and I'll do what I can to help. But your life, each of our lives is like in our own hands, and it's our responsibility to do what we do and figure out, you know, where we're going. I would say the other piece that came in a little bit later is I started taking a yoga class maybe 5 years ago now or so. I started taking this yoga class, and it was, my yoga instructor was just so amazing. And it was part yoga, part life coaching. It was like a mix of both. Mm-hmm. And so having that experience with her, I think I really, you know, it was at a time when I was still deciding if I wanted to go into coaching or not. I wasn't totally set on it yet. I was exploring what path I might want to go down. I was working full time. I was, you know, and I was doing volunteer work. So I was working full time in a healthcare administrative position. And then I was volunteering in like a social work environment. And then I was taking this yoga class and kind of being coached by my yoga instructor along the way. And I all of those experiences, I guess, all together helped me to
created
see.
Created that. Yeah.
It
yeah.
helped me to see, like, what I liked about each one, what I wanted to do down the line. And, you know, I was also, the great thing about the job, I was at this job for 4 years almost, and it was working in a small business. And so seeing that the small business aspect of it was really helpful too, just seeing how it runs and seeing like what it takes.
Because when you're a coach, you have to run a business.
And so just seeing the little things that it takes, and just the amount of discipline necessary, and establishing those things in your business that you need to be successful, like just seeing all of it along the way. I guess there were so many pieces that came together. You know, it was a mix of all of these experiences. But I think having particularly the yoga class at that time and the coaching and seeing its effect on me, like that helped me work through all of the things in my life that I was trying to decide. Yeah, like my own, I was coached, you know, essentially. Like I got right. coached, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like,
this is amazing.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I want to do this. I can see myself doing this. And so that really helped.
So this is my last question for you. Now that we're here doing this podcast together, what are your hopes for this podcast?
Ah, that's a great question. I really hope, first of all, selfishly, I guess, I really hope that for you and I, it just brings us closer together, because it's so cool to be working on a project with you. As stressful as it's been at times, and like hard as it has been to put our two minds together and somehow come up with one idea.
Right. Like, cohesive. Yes.
Like it's been such a great experience, and it's, you know, there's nobody else I would want to go into a business with more other than right. family, you know, other than my sister. And just to be, you know, it's brought us closer together already, and we're learning together as we go. And it's really bringing out each of our strengths. And I think it's forcing us to learn to better trust each other also.
Right.
And so all of those pieces, like I hope that, you know, that continues, just on a personal note. And then on a larger end, I really hope it brings other people together too. I hope we're able to just create a community, where people can learn more about just this whole concept of a bold true life and what it really means to live boldly and truly, to create the life that you want and not, you know, what everybody else is telling you or what you think you should be doing, but really what you want, what you're meant to be doing. And so, you know, having the community piece, like seeing other people doing it, that's what has helped me so much along the way. And I want to right. establish, you know, a bigger community for people that look and think like us too. And not right. just because, you know, so much of this, the self-help world is awesome. But it's not really, you know, it's hard to identify yourself in it if you're not white. Not to throw shade out or anything, but like it's hard to see ourselves in it. And so I really want to be able to widen that community and help people to see themselves in it and, you know, realize that, like, you know, it's not about your skin color. It's not about even, you know, how much money you make or what you're doing with your life or where, like, what stage of your life you're in to do this work. You can really come in from anywhere as long as you're ready and willing. Otherwise, it won't work. But yeah, really, the community piece. I'm really excited about creating this space for people that look like me and probably talk like me and think like me in a lot of ways. Because I don't think there's a lot of representation for us. Not in the self-help world, and not yet.
Right.
You know, thankfully, I do see a lot more representation in so many other areas, but this particular one, which I think is one of the most important, there's really not yet. And this work matters.
If there is, it looks very like it's very separate, but there's not an integrative place where you can talk about all of the aspects of your life.
Yeah. So like bringing together.
Everything.
So like the religion and the spirituality, plus like the personal life stuff that you're dealing with and like your relationships and your work things and like all of the different pieces of life.
It's not connected. You're just kind of off going, getting self-help and self-help places and, you know, religion and religion places and spirituality, which is weird, and spirituality spaces. That's not necessarily automatic.
So a community. That's really, when it comes down to it, that's what I'm most excited about. I'm also, the last thing is just interviewing people. I'm so excited about interviewing people for this podcast and having these conversations, because that's really, you know, behind closed doors, when, you know, when we were first thinking about it, that's what got me excited. I was having all of these really interesting conversations with people, and I was like, man, I wish these were recorded, or I wish like we could have larger scale conversations so that more people
like
could
this.
Hear it. That's those are probably the three things.
Cool.
Yeah. Alrighty, are we switching over? Are you ready for your questions?
Okay.
And I have to say, your questions were great, very creative. My questions are slightly different. They're not going to go down quite the same path, but I think they're going to be interesting nonetheless. So, I guess I'm starting with a similar question to your last one. I'm curious, what got you interested in making this podcast? Like, leading up to this point, how did you get here?
So there's a couple of things.
Thanks so much for listening to part one. You can catch the rest of my sister's interview right now in the second episode of our two-part series premiere. You made it to the end. Thanks so much for listening.
Don't forget to subscribe, and you can find us at boldtruelife.com/podcast. Or your podcast player of choice, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google.
We would love to hear your thoughts on today's conversation.
If you like what you hear, please take 2 minutes of your precious time to rate and review.
It really helps us out. Thanks.